I would like to welcome you all to this Greens List Continuing Professional Development Seminar. My name is Paul Santa Maria, and I'm going to chair this morning's session, which invites an overview of the current status of alternative dispute resolution options and practices. In getting together and discussing the idea of ADD seminars on the list, we thought it would be good to have three sessions which would focus upon the relative merits of ADR over orthodox court litigation, the options available to clients to resolve commercial disputes, and to share the experiences of leading practitioners about the advantages and disadvantages of each option. And the sessions, we thought, would also consider discrete issues that arise from time to time within particular options, with some special emphasis on the mediation process. And we had, we hope, to promote discussion amongst this group about the likely trends of ADR in the future, it now having been in place for some 25 years or so as part of mainstream resolution of disputes. So that in this morning's session, we propose to have something of an overview, which we've entitled Horses for Courses, and to look at conventional litigation, arbitration, particularly commercial arbitration, expert determination, mediation, compulsory case management, and also the topic of early neutral evaluation, which is mentioned in most of the practice books and court rules, but it's actually very difficult to find someone who's actually participated in one. And I have a particular interest in pursuing that topic this morning. The second session will be here on the 14th of June, and that session will focus upon mediation. And we thought it would be good to promote discussion of topics such as whether mediation should be compulsory, how best to prepare a client for mediation, how best to approach and prepare the mediator for a particular dispute, and then subtopics such as the preparation and exchange of position papers, techniques of mediation advocacy, and the very important topic of documenting a settlement. And that session will be chaired by Georgina Gregoriou and will be presented by Michael O'Brien, Travis Mitchell and Gerald Miller. And the third session in our series will take place, I think, on the 26th of July. If it's not, you'll see in the emails the correct date. And that will also address principally mediation, but in particular the use and abuse of the mediation process. And we often come across mediations, well, sometimes we come across in a mediation a party who simply refuses to negotiate in good faith. What can one do to respond to that situation? The topic of confidentiality, the limits of confidentiality, what use may be made of things learnt in the course of a mediation. And also where a mediator isn't helpful, or sometimes it might be said misconducts the mediation by putting undue pressure on a party to settle, or one who might be perceived to be unduly partial. These sorts of things do occur from time to time, and it's interesting to discuss the responses. And then the final aspect we thought we'd look at in the third session would be whether there are sanctions for things that occur during the course of a mediation, and whether the Civil Procedure Act has anything to say about these sorts of matters. Now, on arriving this morning, you will see those of you who've been to other Greens List sessions, you will see that there's a very different layout. Already someone has said that this morning looks like something between a session of Oprah Winfrey league teams and on the couch, though we don't have the money for a couch on Green's list at the moment. But it's a different format. We wanted to try and invite a greater level of discussion amongst amongst you attending the session. And that's because we think, as barristers, that we probably have a fair bit to learn from other practitioners about their own experiences and observations of alternative dispute resolution. So for that reason, and to enable the session to flow more easily, our preference is to arrange things in this way. So let me then introduce the members of this morning's panel to my right. Michael Trumbull, Mark Campbell and Elizabeth Brophy. Each has considerable litigation experience as well as expertise in ADR. And I think in this morning's sachet, you'll find each of Michael, Elizabeth and Mark's CVs, and so I don't propose to recite them now. But we're particularly grateful to Michael Trumbull as he's agreed to be the guest solicitor member of the panel, being aware of the depth of his experience in the front end of ADR and in particularly the drafting of ADR clauses in commercial contracts. So we're grateful to you, Michael. Both Elizabeth and Mark have been accredited mediators since about 1992, and Elizabeth has most recently conducted the mediation accreditation courses for the Victorian Bar, which I think took place over about two weekends and about 10 or 15 hours of pretty intensive work.
Actually,
38. 38. There were lots of people who weren't able to go to the footy or the races on those weekends. And Mark has a very developed mediation practice at the bar and has substantial experience in all aspects of ADR. I thought I would begin this morning's discussion by asking you, Michael, about your experience in the preparation of dispute resolution clauses in contracts and your own perceptions of how the culture has been changed over the last 20 or so years as far as the client's expectations go of ADR.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you for inviting me this morning. As you see from my CV, my experience is very much in the areas of non-litigation, perhaps what we might often call front-end, preparing contracts and dealing with all sorts of situations. My background for most of my career has been in commercial property, although in the last 5 years, in my so-called semi-retirement, I have very much a general practice now as a sole practitioner, and I do a very wide range of things. And as Paul indicated, a lot of what I do is preparing contracts for all sorts of transactions. And in this particular area of the potential for dispute, a lot of thought goes into the kinds of solutions we might be able to provide at the beginning in the contract for the potential for a dispute resolution. So thinking about sort of, for the purpose of discussion today, the kinds of contracts that I do and the kinds of solutions that I try to provide for my clients, probably the most common thing, and often it's relatively small contracts rather than large ones, the provision of a dispute resolution involving the appointment of an expert is the one I tend to favour more than anything else, because you can have a very, very simple mechanism, a very, if you like, fast track access to somebody who really knows how best to resolve a dispute, and a fairly broad provision giving the expert the ability to make a final and binding decision for the parties on their dispute, effectively giving the expert a badge and a gun so they can nip the dispute in the bud quickly. And thankfully, most times you don't actually get to access the provision, and that's good, but at least it provides for the solution. But that's perhaps just one area. There are lots of other forms of dispute resolution that you can provide for contractually, and ranging, for example, at one extreme to construction contracts, some quite large, some quite small, where you really need to think about who the parties are and the kind of project they're dealing with, and the most appropriate form of dispute resolution, whether it be arbitration provisions or directly to court or an expert, always preceded by mediation, because the focusing the parties in the context of a mediation could often bring about a resolution very quickly. And then you think about joint ventures, partnerships, circumstances involving people co-owning things, shareholders, unit holders in trust operating businesses, where the really bad disputes that you get are the ones that end up with a deadlock of some kind, and if that ends up in court, then the court is probably going to be in a position where the court will probably appoint an administrator, force a sale of the business, really bring about a very harsh result for the party. So having sort of some form of alternate dispute resolution in that context, so that the parties have got a much better opportunity of working through their problems and breaking the deadlock before it even gets to court, is really important. So I say, sort of in the contractual sense, thinking about it very carefully at the drafting of the contract stage can often save a lot of angst down the track. So that's really important.
And Michael, are the clients becoming more and more savvy about ADR techniques and more sort of shy about conventional litigation?
I think the short answer to that, Paul, is cost. The clients are very focused on how much it's going to cost them, whether the dispute is some small thing or a potentially very large thing. I think the first thing the clients look at is cost. Mm. And I dare say, in many cases, cost comes before principle. The clients are looking for a practical outcome. And from a solicitor's point of view, what tends to happen in day-to-day practice is, every day I'll get a phone call from somebody saying, I've got this problem, it's heading for a dispute, what do we do about it? And most times, by the time the conversation is over, or maybe through a series of conversations, we nip it in the bud by giving the client a dose of reality, helping the client to really understand the facts that they're dealing with, looking at the pain of the kind of resolution they're thinking about when they first contact you. I had a call just a few days ago from a client, so I want to come and see you now. He came in with a couple of colleagues and thumped the table and said, we want an injunction, we want it today. And after an hour of discussion and bringing the thing back to reality, and knowing this client is a bush lawyer, we've had many dealings in the past, we've at least brought the matter into a process of resolution, which will take a long time, but we won't be going to court, we won't be seeking an injunction, we won't be doing any of that stuff. But it means, from a solicitor's point of view, you often have to be very strong with clients like that to bring reality to the table and get the client to understand that really what they're seeking, which is a fight, isn't really going to be the answer.
Michael, last week when we were having a chat about this seminar, you mentioned, and I think you've touched on this, the importance of knowing your client and the other party that your client is negotiating with a view to contracting.
Yep.
That informs the type of clause that you might put into the contract to break deadlocks and so forth. Can you yep. give an example of where that might have been then?
Yeah, I think most parties we're dealing, particularly in a commercial environment, most parties we're dealing with are parties who want a simple, practical result where they have a problem, so they can they don't waste too much money, they get on with their lives, running their businesses and getting on with things. So, but knowing that inevitably problems are going to arise in commercial circumstances, you've got to try to give them the opportunity to have a forum to resolve their problem easily and quickly. And I think that, as I was saying before, I think it's very tempting to use the appointment of an expert to just step in and do it for them, and that helps a lot. But then knowing clients at the other end of the spectrum, I've done a lot of work for government in my former life as a partner of a large law firm, and I sort of learned from experience with government that you're really not going to get a decision on a serious dispute for a whole lot of reasons, and really the only place to go is court, and the court will decide, and those sort of cases are very hard to settle, particularly in areas like, you know, construction, infrastructure and those sorts of cases. So in some cases you just have to recognise that really the only place to go is court. Another example I've had a few weeks ago where I've prepared a contract which is just about to be signed, where we thought about now what kind of issues are likely to happen if this thing does go off the rails, and what is there a potential, which we did recognise here, for somebody to generate a dispute for their own purposes, not necessarily a genuine dispute. So we, in that contract, we provided that, or we allowed the contract to operate so that the only place to go if that person wants to bring it in is to go to court.
Right.
And that creates a great deterrent, really, to somebody who may be wanting to be mischievous, which we recognised, you know, knowing the parties. And that's how we've framed the contract. So we're pretty confident there won't be a dispute, or there won't be a dispute that will be sort of taken to a serious form of resolution. Yeah. If it does happen, then that party can have to think very carefully about it. So that's sort of tailoring the contract horses for courses.
Mm. I wanted to, I should have said at the outset, people should feel free to ask questions or contribute to the discussion at any stage. And Michael, I wanted to ask you, and then perhaps to invite others to add their own observations. In drafting commercial contracts, how does arbitration sit these days in comparison with expert determinations, and what's the perception of the cost of arbitration, and is arbitration generally regarded as much quicker and better outcome for people in commercial organisations?
Yeah, so this is my view, and I guess sort of my experience. I often provide for arbitration in construction contracts. It's a pretty conventional means of dispute resolution in that area of business. I've found I tend not to use arbitration clauses very much at all in commercial contracts. As I was saying before, favouring expert determination wherever possible, because I just think it gets to the nub of the problem and resolves it hopefully quickly. But from, I guess, the experience I've had, particularly in recent times where I've been a bit more exposed to litigation than I had been when I was really focusing on front-end commercial property work, The experience I've had in recent times is the courts give pretty good service to the parties, and I've tended to allow the contract to have the parties find themselves in court, and using the court processes well, you can get to a result, you know, fairly quickly, and it tends to, I think, just be a practical way of resolving things. The cost of arbitration compared with the cost of going to court is probably about the same. The time that it takes is probably about the same because, again, with my experience with arbitration, you tend to go through the same sort of interlocutory procedures in any event. So in my practice, it doesn't come up very often, and I don't really promote it, to be honest.
Thought I might, at that point, one of our guests this morning is Ron Salter, and Ron has practiced in a variety of commercial areas, specialising in maritime law and cargo shipping claims and things of that nature. Ron, you've practised as a solicitor for many years in the areas of arbitration, but you're also an arbitrator. What's your perception of arbitration versus conventional court litigation? What are the advantages and disadvantages?
Well, I think I'd agree with Michael that in many respects the courts are a good way to go. Certainly over the last couple of decades, litigation service has improved in all the courts with case management and so forth. You can get on pretty quickly and so forth. I am not, despite being purporting to be an arbitrator, I'm not an advocate for arbitration as a means of dispute resolution for what I will call domestic disputes, local commercial disputes, unless the parties are very concerned about confidentiality. One of the great benefits of arbitration is that the dispute is kept out of the public domain. So if it's a sensitive issue in a contract, if the parties are sensitive and they don't want any disputes to achieve any publicity, I think they're wise to head towards arbitration. In an international contract, I think arbitration is absolutely an essential ingredient. It is far easier to enforce an arbitration award internationally than it is to enforce a judgment of a court in any country. There's, I've forgotten how many countries, but something like 160 countries have signed up to the New York Convention, which enables relatively simple enforcement of an arbitration award. It seems bizarre, but if there's an arbitrator hands down an award here in Melbourne, and the other party's in Italy and isn't paying, it's much easier to enforce that award in Italy than it would to enforce a judgment of an Australian court. So I think it's an essential ingredient, quite frankly, in any international contract that the parties agree arbitration. But for domestic disputes, totally within Australia, I would think the main ingredient favouring arbitration is the privacy / confidentiality issue. Cost may often be greater even than litigation these days, particularly if you get into a situation where the dispute involves a tribunal of three arbitrators, which always seems to me to be an incredibly unnecessary expense. So I wouldn't personally push arbitration as a means of dispute resolution for a domestic contract, except where confidentiality and privacy are serious considerations.
Thanks,
does that answer you?
Thank you very much. Is there anyone who'd like to add to what Ron has said from their own experiences of arbitration? Ron mentioned, I think, one of the differences in the last 20 or so years is case management. And my perception of litigation is the same, that if you can involve a judge early in hearing a case, especially if that judge is going to be the one that hears the dispute, then I'm not sure that arbitration has any particular advantage over litigation. I agree with what Michael has said, that the time is approximately the same, and of course the parties are not paying at this stage anyway for a judge to hear a case, unlike an arbitrator. And if you've got a panel of two or three arbitrators, it can get pretty expensive. Mark Campbell, case management is something which is really percolating its way through all jurisdictions.
It is, and I've been impressed listening to what both Ron and Michael have said about the way in which the courts seem to have responded positively to handling cases that are before them. And they're doing it in a much more creative way. I was speaking on the weekend to senior counsel, and just as an example of the way that courts have been, I think, creatively responding to dispute resolution, there's a matter that's currently before Justice Croft, a large piece of litigation, and His Honour has referred the handling of interlocutory disputes to senior counsel to act as a facilitator. And so the parties come before him if there's a dispute as to discovery of documents and so forth, and he facilitates, he doesn't arbitrate, but he facilitates a resolution of that dispute and liaises constantly with the judge, and it's apparently working extremely well. So I think that the courts are providing a much more flexible service indeed, and so I think that what you've said about litigation is absolutely correct.
The other aspect is that, as I understand it currently, in terms of matters that are initiated in the Supreme Court, most of them settle. There's a very small number that actually proceed to judgment. So somewhere along the line, through these various processes, matters are resolved. And I think it's largely through mediation, but perhaps other approaches to resolving disputes as well, including all the various forms of case management along the way, such as the special referee, use of the special referee that Mark's referring to. So it seems to me that if you go the litigation route, in any event, at some point along the track, it's going to resolve in any event. And I'm not sure how that compares with arbitration and matters that where that's decided that that will be the route to take. Perhaps somebody else has got some knowledge about that.
I'll just throw in another dollar's worth and then I'll shut up. I, as long as I've been in the law, I reckon about the same percentage of cases settle before hearing. The difference today in litigation is that instead of all hanging around the corridors negotiating at the door of the court, we're forced to do it at an earlier stage. So I think settlements are by and large happening earlier. I think the same percentage is likely to be there. I don't think it's any greater percentage of settlements today than there was 30, 40 years ago. I may be wrong, but I think they're just happening earlier as a result of mediation and intervention by the courts. So that's all I wanted to say.
Ron, that invites me to ask Elizabeth a question. I was going to ask her whether the rate of settlements is because we're getting better at mediation. Now, what Ron has said might suggest that we don't need mediation to settle disputes. We've always been able to settle disputes. Disputes have in the main been settled prior to trial or judgment. But I wondered what you thought about the mediation process and whether it's more sophisticated and better as time has gone on.
Yes. Well, it's interesting in terms of, I don't know, I know there are stats from the last few years in terms of matters that have been initiated in the list in the Supreme Court and settlement rates, and it's like it's a very, very small percentage. I'm not sure it's about 10% or something like that, or even less than that, that actually proceed to judgment. So I'm not sure how that compares to 20 years ago, prior to the initiation of alternative dispute resolution in Victoria. But certainly in terms of what we've learnt about ADR over the last 20 years has just been huge. And I mean, it goes back to, I think, in Victoria, historically, where it commenced in the late 80s, where there were long waiting lists, etc., for the courts, and I think a handful of barristers were plucked out and asked to basically bring the parties together and try and resolve these matters, and they had little, if any, training, but somehow managed to start resolving these disputes, and that led to what was called in 1992 the Spring Offensive. Where they got stuck into big waiting lists of matters, proceedings there, and managed to resolve many of them. And of course, over that time, there began a period of developing specific training programs for mediators, etc. And certainly, it seems to me now that we're moving very much into a second phase of alternative dispute resolution in Australia. And the and we can think about that from many different ways. First of all, there is an increasing emphasis on the quality of the experience. And I think we've started in particular with mediation, so that we now have a national accreditation scheme for mediators in Australia. It's voluntary, but increasingly courts and people that are referring matters to mediation are looking for accredited mediators, because it's an acknowledgement that a specific standard has been met in terms of the training and the experience of the person. I think that there's also that I think parties are looking for a different experience too, and there's much more focus on the quality of experience for parties. And particularly in the legal profession, I think that, you know, what has evolved is an emphasis on what we might call settlement mediation, which is very much about compromise and incremental bargaining. So one party says, I want $80,000, the other party says, I'll give you $60,000, and the other party says, well, I'll take $70,000, and it's over, and you sign your terms of settlement, etc.